This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. On the last day of this year's term, the Supreme Court issued decisions on a number of important cases, none more anticipated than what's become known as the New Haven firefighters case, in part because the last set of judges to review this case included now Supreme Court nominee Sonia Sotomayor. As expected, the court ruled 5-4 in favor of white firefighters. The city of New Haven had tossed out the results of an exam because no African Americans qualified for promotion to lieutenant or captain. When the city proposed a new test, those who did qualify sued on the basis of reverse discrimination. If you've taken or are familiar with civil service exams and you've been following this case, tell us what's likely to be the impact where you live or work. Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website, npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Later, Iraq on the opinion page this week as U.S. forces withdraw from Iraq cities. The retired officer who wrote much of the counterinsurgency manual takes a longer view on U.S. interests in Iraq and how to achieve them with diminished presence. But first, the Supreme Court and racial discrimination. Joining us here in Studio 3A is David Savage, who covers the Supreme Court for the Los Angeles Times. David, always nice to have you on the program today.
Hi, Neil.
And this is clearly a victory for the firefighters.
Yes. The big issue here is whether employers can or should take race into account in deciding who gets hired or promoted. New Haven is a city with about half the population is minorities. They gave a test in 2003. It was a promotional exam. And when the results came back, it was clear that none of the black firefighters had the top scores that would make them eligible for promotion. At that point, the city decided to step back and say, we're not going to go ahead with that suit. They were sued. And then today, the Supreme Court basically said, taking race into account, being worried about how the results were going to come out, violates the rights of the white firefighters and is a type of racial discrimination.
Well, the city was worried about the 1964 Civil Rights Act. They could be sued on the basis of this for discrimination against African Americans.
That's why this was a hard case, harder case than some people portrayed it, because there are actually two parts of the Civil Rights Act that are in conflict. One part says, do not discriminate against any employee because of race. Another part says you, the employer, don't use any job standard or criterion that has a disparate impact, an unfair impact based on race. The city pointed to the second one and said that's why we're not going ahead.
Because we could get sued.
We could get sued by black firefighters saying you're using a test that has a disparate impact. The other side of the law says, you know, was what the white firefighters relied on it, and as you say, they ended up winning 5-4 in the Supreme Court.
Now, disparate impact, in other words, that's based on the results of the test, not whether you look at the text, you know, read the questions, and was this fair or not?
Yes, and I think one of the lasting importances of the decision today is the Supreme Court basically said, don't go to disparate impact unless you have some evidence that their test is in some way flawed and doesn't really go to the heart of the job relatedness. They said there's no evidence this test was flawed.
Because the city of New Haven didn't examine the test.
That's right. There was no evidence this test was flawed, so New Haven was not justified in backing away.
So what happens next? Do the people who qualified on the basis of the old test, are they back on the promotions list? Are they next up for the jobs?
Yes, I think that's right. They basically won the case. The court ruled for them. The case goes back to, the trial judge to figure out what to do. But the likely thing is that they will get the promotions.
And is it now possible for African-Americans who work in the fire department, the African-Americans who did not qualify, to say, wait a minute, the test wasn't fair, we're going to sue you too?
I don't think they'd have a very good suit in this case. But I do think there are plenty of other suits around the country where black firefighters and policemen have won such claims.
So is this going to have a big impact, do you think?
On cities and their tests? I think it would have some impact. It's hard to believe anybody could bungle the way New Haven managed to bungle this, because it seems to me you want to take this into account at the beginning. It's really awkward to have everybody study for the test, take the test, and then say, oh, never mind. But so I think it will have some impact in one of the things cities can do is use methods other than tests. There's a lot of discussion. in the dissent about saying you could have what they call assessment teams or assessment centers where you judge a person's whole career, you talk to them, you interview them, there's a little bit of testing involved, that that's a better way to do it than just a paper and pencil test. This seems to me another incentive to move away from strictly paper and pencil tests.
One of the arguments on the dissent, which was written by Judge Ginsburg, was that, in fact, the white firefighters weren't hurt. Nobody got a promotion.
Well, they weren't hurt in the sense that, you know, somebody else got the promotion instead of them. But from their point of view, you know, the city set out this promotional scheme, said do well on the test. They did well on the test, and then the city said never mind. So they thought they were hurt.
Mm-hmm. This is going to be portrayed by some as it obviously moved its way up through federal court to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals that's based in New York. It was examined by a three-judge panel, which included Sonia Sotomayor, now, of course, the President Obama's nominee to the Supreme Court. And some are going to say this case is a reversal of Sotomayor.
Some have already said so. There has been a lot of commentary to that effect. Those who are critical of Sonia Sotomayor, this is something easy to point to, say this is a big decision, the Supreme Court reversed her. I will say on the other side is that she was basically following the precedent in the Second Circuit and what you would read as the Supreme Court's precedent, which is to say, don't go ahead with a test that's going to have a disparate impact on minorities. So she was indeed reversed, but if you're a lower court judge, that's what being a lower court judge is. You decide cases, and then the Supreme Court is free to hear an appeal and come to a different conclusion.
Though some would also say that the cursory opinion issued by the three-judge panel of the Second Circuit Court of Appeals just didn't address the big issues raised in this case.
Yes, I think she'll be asked about that, and I'm interested to see what she says at the hearings. There's a lot of criticism on the procedural side. I've heard people say that the Second Circuit does that in a whole lot of cases. If they've got a very thorough opinion from a district judge and the precedent is strong, they simply issue a very cursory, short opinion. But I would like to hear her explanation as to say, why didn't you explain more the reasoning behind your decision?
And we're going to talk more about some of the other decisions handed down by the Supreme Court today and last week as well. But we want to focus first on the New Haven firefighters and the impact on civil service tests where people live and work across the country. If you've taken one of these tests, if you've been part of these hiring decisions, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Joining us now from Austin, Texas, is Greg Coleman, who one of the lawyers who represented the firefighters and argued their case before the Supreme Court. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Neil, for having me on.
And congratulations.
I appreciate that. It's a great win. We're very happy to have it.
And do you think this is a comprehensive victory, everything you wanted?
It really is. We're looking forward to having our clients installed as lieutenants and captains on the New Haven Fire Department. It's something that they've been waiting for nearly 6 years.
And the crux of your argument, as I understood it, was that this, to as David Savage said, to have this test and say this is the basis on which promotions will be given and that they did well, that the only basis that the city decided not to give them promotions was their race.
Well, that's exactly right. In preparing the test and setting it up, the city and those who developed the test went to extraordinary lengths to try to ensure that the way it was given would minimize any disparate impact. And so the city went to great lengths to make the test fair for everybody who took it. But nevertheless, you still have certain job qualifications, and you want people who are serving in leadership positions to have the knowledge, have the skills, have the ability, and have the leadership qualities that will make them great lieutenants and captains on the fire department. This test did that. The city, at the end of the day, was simply unhappy with the results because they didn't have a racial balance that the city thought was appropriate. And it did take action, ultimately, on the basis of the results.
It would be easy for some to argue that you look at the results of this test, and again, we're going to that other part of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, you look at the results of this test and say, look, no African-Americans qualified for promotion. This must have been unfair in some respect.
Well, at the end of the day, that's really what the city did. The city made a decision based on nothing more than the outcome itself. Let's look at the numerical disparity. But what the city didn't do and what the Supreme Court called the city down on the mat for was say, well, the statute, the disparate impact statute, requires more than a numerical disparity. It requires proof that the test was taking things into account that are not legitimate, that you were, for instance, in the old case, you know, you're requiring a high school diploma on a test that doesn't, for a job that doesn't require that you have a high school diploma, simply to keep out people on the basis of the race. So using criteria that are not job-related, the city didn't examine that. The city did not take a close look at whether there was a real alternative that was available and could be given at the time that would result in less disparate impact. So what the court found is that the city was simply acting on the basis of a numerical disparity, which is really no different than instituting a soft quota.
Let's get a caller on the line. Scott's with us. Scott calling from Salt Lake City.
Good afternoon, Neil. I just wanted to say I think this is a wonderful thing. I am a facilitator of human relations dialogues. I do a lot of work around race relations. And I'm a huge supporter of Obama. I'm a huge supporter of Sotomayor. But I think this is a good decision. I think standing up to racial discrimination, we have a new era of that in the United States. And I think it's going to take a lot of courage on all of our parts. And part of that courage is recognizing when we're being sabotaged by our own outdated laws and we're holding people up based on their skin color.
The Civil Rights Act of 1964, outdated, you think?
Well, certainly not outdated in many senses, but here's an example of where these firefighters did well. They performed on an unbiased test. Sounds like it was unbiased. And yet, because of their skin color, they were not able to succeed. Now, if we put that in any other context, those are the grounds which create racial discrimination. And I think it's part of the new kind of era of racial discrimination that we're going to have to move into in the United States is having the courage to recognize when we really have to stand up to the good old standard of, was this person inhibited based on their skin color?
Well, Scott, thanks very much for the call.
Yeah,
the colorblind outlook you were just talking about, Greg Coleman. Thanks very much for being with us today. And again, congratulations.
Appreciate it very much.
Greg Coleman argued before the Supreme Court on behalf of the New Haven firefighters. He joined us from a studio in Austin, Texas. When we come back from a short break, we'll hear from somebody who wanted the other decision to come out. And we'll also talk more with David Savage about the Supreme Court decisions handed down today. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, and we're discussing today's ruling from the Supreme Court, which agreed with a group of white firefighters that they had been the victims of racial discrimination. The decision could have a significant implication in workplaces across the country. If you've taken or are familiar with civil service exams and you've been following this case, what's the likely impact where you work? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Zap us an email, talk@npr.org. There's also a conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. We'll get back to David Savage in a minute, who covers the Supreme Court for the Los Angeles Times. But joining us here in Studio 3A is Matthew Colangelo, an attorney at the Matthew Colangelo with the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, which filed an amicus brief, friend of the court, on behalf of the city of New Haven. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And I know you must be disappointed with the decision, but in what respect in particular?
Well, I'm especially disappointed that Justice Kennedy's decision, writing on behalf of a narrow majority of five justices, really ignored what we think is critical context in this situation. And Justice Ginsburg, in her dissenting opinion, which she pointedly read from the bench this morning, she rightly criticized Justice Kennedy for ignoring the context. Firefighting in particular is an industry that historically has notoriously excluded African Americans, women, and other underrepresented groups. And Justice Kennedy's majority opinion really set aside all that context and declined to look at what New Haven did within the framework of that history, which is not ancient history.
And I noticed you happen to be here in the studio with us as David Savage is talking about the incompetence and the mishandling of the case by the officials in New Haven. You were nodding your head in agreement.
I nodded because although Justice Kennedy does establish a new standard today, and that standard is a higher test that does make it somewhat more difficult for employers to take voluntary measures to avoid discrimination, I do think that the standard could easily have been satisfied by New Haven. In fact, I think Justice Kennedy was wrong not to send the case back down and let New Haven try to meet the new test he set out. But it's simply incorrect to say that New Haven was acting, as Justice Kennedy says, based solely on raw racial results. They did have serious concerns that their promotion process just wasn't designed to select people who were most qualified to be lieutenants and captains in the fire department.
And the political part of this, and that has to be part of it. As David mentioned, New Haven, a city that is a half minority, about the process not only needs to be fair, but to be seen to be fair.
Well, I think the process here actually was quite open and quite transparent. When the city got the test results back, they held four public hearings of the Civil Service Commission to examine the test results and to decide what to do next. So I think it was quite an open and transparent process.
Let's see if we get another caller on the conversation. This is Rich. Rich with us from Traverse City in Michigan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I worked in civil service at a local level for 8 years, and part of my job was to validate tests to make sure that they actually measured success on the job, and that we didn't have a less, if there was disparate impact, that we didn't have a less discriminatory way of doing that. And I threw out a lot of exams that excluded people or had no relationship to the job we were applying for or being promoted to. Question I had is, was this test used by, and I did that in the 80s. Question I had was whether New Haven ever validated this examination procedure.
The test was drawn up by an outside agency. Matthew Colangelo?
No, as that term is used in fair employment law, New Haven never did validate the test. By the same token, they never had a judicial finding that the test was invalid, and that seems to be something that Justice Kennedy was concerned about. But New Haven did have extensive evidence that other cities around the country have figured out much better ways to promote firefighters. And Justice Ginsburg pointed out that it really is odd to be selecting leaders for the fire department on the basis of a multiple choice pencil and paper test, when there are much better ways to measure leadership, command presence, and ability to perform in stressful situations.
Rich?
I have to agree with you. I heard one of the speakers talk about assessment centers where you actually place candidates in similar positions and watch them make their decisions, and I'd have to agree, but I'm really shocked that that was a basic part of my job, and 30 years later, we still have cities using tests that haven't been validated.
Matthew?
Well, I do think it's important to note that in many ways, as disappointed as I am with Justice Kennedy's decision, it is quite a narrow ruling in a number of respects. In particular, he goes out of his way to say that his decision does not constrain employers at all in taking aggressive measures before they develop a selection process to make sure that that process is non-discriminatory and inclusive. He really says that the decision is confined to the unique circumstances presented here, in which New Haven had already given a test that they had gone to some lengths to develop and then decided to walk away from the results after seeing them. So I think this does retain for employers a considerable measure of discretion to make sure that their employment practices remain as fair as possible.
Thanks very much, Rich.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And let's go now to Paul. Paul with us from Salt Lake.
Hello.
Hi.
I am a first-time caller, long-time listener, Neil.
Well, thank you for that.
I'm a career fire service, career fire officer for 15 years, and I think communities can disguise what they do and lack transparency, and I am glad that the decision went towards the firefighters in this case, because communities have a long-time history of promoting for nepotism, as well as satisfying the needs of Title VII and Title IX.
So you think transparency in this case argues in favor of if you give the test and these are the people who are qualified, those are the people who should get promoted?
Well, I think communities in general will disguise their abilities to hire and promote who they wish, and they do so by lacking transparency, and a lot of communities do this throughout the country. They don't necessarily state that they're doing so openly, because obviously that's a violation of fair hiring practices.
But in addition to what you were talking about, Paul, I think it's inarguable that there is a history of discrimination in the past, that these are the fire departments in many cities around the country have been seen as they're largely white.
That may be true. And it also may be true that fire service in general has provided good quality leadership based on correct promotional processes. And I think that some of that has been diluted by the effect of losing the best candidate for satisfying Title VII and Title IX. And in this case, New Haven threw out a test with the attempt to satisfy those requests with affirmative action, and it's left them holding the bag. Hmm.
Paul, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Okay.
And I wanted to ask you, Matthew Colangelo, do you agree that this case will go back to the district court and then these guys will likely get the promotions?
I think what happens in terms of the open positions in New Haven on remand will really depend on what Judge Arterton, the district judge below, decides is the appropriate remedy. I certainly think that's a possibility, yes.
All right. One last call on this, and this is Luis. Luis calling us from San Antonio.
Yes, sir. I've been listening to I've been taking these civil service exams for about 3 years now, and I found all the paper tests to be fair. I really wish New Haven would have done something that wasn't a paper test for promotions. But I do agree that there are better ways of selecting and for promoting. I can't stay on too long, but I am Hispanic, and I did want to say that.
And what kind of a job are you applying for?
Firefighter.
To be a firefighter. And
yes, sir.
The paper and pencil tests you've taken do seem fine.
Yes, sir. I've taken paper and pencil tests in California, all over California, and here in Texas, for about 3 years now, and I've never ran into a problem, and I've always I've managed to get up to chief interviews and all that, and I've never ran into an issue where race was an issue.
Good luck, Luis. Appreciate the phone call, and understand that you're busy. And Matthew Colangelo, thank you so much for your time today. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Matthew Colangelo, an attorney for the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, who filed a friend of the court brief, an amicus brief, on behalf of the city of New Haven, which today lost its case before the Supreme Court of the United States, which ruled in favor of white firefighters who argued that they were, in fact, suffering discrimination as a result of that decision. David Savage of the Los Angeles Times is still with us. And David, some other cases decided today, in probably the one that people speculated the most about, the Supreme Court punted on a decision about the McCain-Feingold Campaign Finance Reform Act.
Yes, this one may actually be getting bigger. The court kicked the case over to September and said we're going to re-argue it. And this basically, I think, signals that they are going to strike down a series of precedents from the past and say corporations have a free speech right to spend money to influence elections. There's two sort of conflicting areas of law. For 100 years, the federal government has said corporations can't fund candidates, can't take corporate money, put it into campaigns. Same thing applies to unions. Since the 1970s, there's been a whole series of Supreme Court decisions that say the campaign funding laws can really restrict free speech. But they've never gone back and sort of visit, what about the corporation that wants to spend money and put out an ad and says, Neil Conan's running for Congress, but he's not a good guy for business.
Terrible guy for business.
Bad guy for business. They're not actually funding a campaign or whatever, but they want to make their voice heard. I think there's five justices are inclined to say that the corporation has a free speech right to spend its own money independently in ways that could influence an election. That would strike down part of McCain-Feingold and be a pretty big decision.
This was in the case of an anti-Hillary Clinton film that the people who made it wanted to make available on-demand. We're getting into a new world here, David. On-demand features on cable systems. And the ruling at the time was this is no different from a campaign ad, and you're not allowed to do this 30 days ahead of an election.
Yes, it was an intriguing little, interesting little case. You know, this conservative group has this DVD called Hillary the Movie. They want to send it out and also advertise it. Separately, the McCain-Feingold law said you can't use corporate money to talk about a candidate for office in the 30 or 60 days before the election. So from the government's point of view, this little movie was a type of a campaign ad. There was corporate money behind it. It talked about Hillary Clinton. It basically said, don't vote for her.
Mm-hmm.
They thought she was going to be the candidate in 2008. And the court has obviously struggled as to how to decide this case. But five of the justices, the most conservative ones, have been very strongly of the view that free speech should prevail. And rather than deciding the Hillary the movie case today, they announced that we're going to reconsider this in September, but in the much bigger context of overturn the decisions we've handed down in the past that have allowed Congress and the government to restrict corporate-funded messages.
David Savage of the Los Angeles Times is with us. We're discussing the spate of decisions issued recently by the Supreme Court, these on its last day of the term. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Another one, this involves the ability of state attorneys general to look into allegations of improprieties by federally authorized banks and to use warrants to get information on that basis.
Yes, this is another type of case that perhaps wouldn't get the attention that's going to get today because of we know what happened last year with the banks and all the problems they had. There had been this move for a long time for the federal government to say, hey, they're national banks, only we can regulate them. But the states have had a lot of laws that were consumer protection laws. They were designed to protect people from getting bad loans or deceptive loans.
Deceptive loans.
Yeah. Also to protect people from racial discrimination by
mortgage.
Redlining,
yes.
Yes, redlining. And the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, a unit inside the Treasury Department, had basically said the state attorney generals can't enforce those consumer protection laws involving any of the national banks because that's, in effect, intruding on our turf. The Supreme Court overruled that today, disagreed with them, and said, yes, the state attorney generals can enforce their state laws against the national banks.
This was all 50 states. It was Cuomo, who happens to be the attorney general of the state of New York, but all 50 states were on the side.
Yes, that's right. This when Cuomo and Elliot Spitzer actually began this investigation, and the federal government came in and said, sorry, you can't even ask the banks for this information, all the state attorney generals knew that, gee, if that's true, we're really hampered in enforcing any of our consumer protection laws. So they all jumped into the case on New York's side.
One more case. This happened to have been from last week. Last Monday, the court ruled that school districts could be required to reimburse students who choose special education programs at private schools, even if they don't try out the public school special ed offerings first.
Yes, this is an important victory for parents. It's a big loss for school districts. But I must say, I think it's a relatively narrow situation because this was a parent who, where the school district did nothing for their son. He had a lot of behavioral and learning problems. The school district did nothing. They sent the boy to a private school. It was expensive, $50,000. They came back and said, we want to be reimbursed. Congress had said you can't get a reimbursement unless you sort of try out special education in the public school system. The Supreme Court said, no, that doesn't prevent a reimbursement in a situation where the school district has failed its duty to provide, to offer a free public education that would serve the needs of a child with a disability. Because this school district basically did nothing, then the school district is on the hook for the reimbursement.
And finally, David, this is effectively, I guess, the last day on the job for David Souter, the Supreme Court Justice, who has announced plans to retire. At this point, there's no reason to believe that come 2 weeks' time, when the Judiciary Committee begins hearings for Judge Sonia Sotomayor, that her nomination is not going to proceed apace. So how is Judge Souter going to be remembered?
Well, he's John Roberts said in the court today that he's sacrificing the white marble for the white mountains. He wants to go back to New Hampshire. Souter's been a very fine sort of low-key judge. When he was appointed in 1990, a lot of people who knew him said, this guy is a conservative in temperament. He's not an ideological conservative, but he's a very sort of low-key guy who is going to sort of decide cases based on the precedents and not try to make big ideological statements. He basically played out that way. He was not a person who wrote big dramatic opinions. He decided cases very narrowly. He was an extremely hard worker. Nobody worked harder at the court than Souter. He was there every Saturday and Sunday. He read everything. But he never liked being in Washington. In fact, always hated it, loved to go back to New Hampshire in the summer. And basically, to the surprise of all of us, even though he's in good health and is doing the job fine, he has decided to retire and go home.
If anybody has ever spent any time in either Washington or New Hampshire in the summertime, you will recognize what a smart man David Souter is. David Savage, thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks, Neil.
David Savage covers the Supreme Court for the Los Angeles Times, and he joined us here today in Studio 3A. Coming up on the opinion page, Rethinking the Endgame in Iraq, retired Lieutenant Colonel John Nagel argues we need to focus more on the long-term and strategic interests. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.